Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the City Chatter Podcast, the City of Grand Forks Podcast. I'm your host, John Bernstrom, Public Information Officer for the City of Grand Forks, and joining me this week, middle of May, we're joined by Mayor Brandon Bochensky. Mayor, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Second time around here. I think this is going well. This was sort of our brainchild, what, a year ago now? Something like that. It's been going well.
You called me into your office and you're like, hey, we've got an idea. We had kicked around a podcast a little bit.
Yeah.
And not going to lie, it's nice having good equipment to do it. That helps.
Yeah. Well, I think it's been working out great. Hopefully we'll keep it going.
So we'll get right into it here. Lots of city things going on right now. I'm just thinking of last night's meeting. So just some quick updates of where we're at. So it was, what are we, 10 months now since the changing the sales tax for turf and aquatics? Where is that project at right now?
Yeah, so you got the All True Indoor Sports and Aquatics Complex you're talking about. So we went through, we selected an architect. So we just yesterday sat in a panel. We had an engineer, an architect. There's a certain state statute, you know, representatives, they need to be on that panel. So we selected the construction manager at risk. So those scores got tabulated, probably going to get released today. So with that, they're going to work hand in hand with the architect to sort of value engineer, make sure that this project, we get the best bang for the buck and that you don't end up with an award-winning architecture design and structure that you can't build because you can't afford it. So they're going to meld those two and make sure we get operational efficiencies and that we get the most out of the facility. So we're still looking at groundbreaking next spring with, late 2026, early 2027 opening of the facility.
And we're still talking the location south of the Allaire Center, correct?
Yes, that location will stay. And the only thing that's changed recently is we were looking at the Children's Museum. They had come to us and one of the sponsors of the Children's Museum had said, well, maybe if we pair this at the same site, you know, Ultra donated the land. Maybe they can donate dollars towards the building instead of the land so you could get more dollars going towards that. Can you get some efficiencies, you know, a little less parking so both structures don't need all this parking, the Allaire Center, all this parking. All that parking sits there so much. Some of the infrastructure, there was some savings that we, you know, clearly could have gotten by pairing them together. So we're looking at that to see if it makes sense. Ultimately, the Children's Museum Group would have to, you know, ask if, you know, to move the location there, but it could be quite the entertainment and arts and museum district to have, you know, all those along 42nd, especially with that underpass getting done within the next 5 or 6 years.
Well, that whole corner of town, right? So there's the overpass underpass, I think, is what we're landed on for underneath the railroad tracks there on 42nd. You head farther south, 47th interchange. So we got a letter from the feds that said you guys can go ahead and look at this. I know I've been with the city for 18 years, and there's been talk another interchange as a mayor, probably being a little more involved in it. That had to feel nice to get that letter.
We've been beating the drum on that. So it was called an interstate justification report. And so we essentially got a nod from the feds that an interstate interchange is justified for there. So that will allow us to apply for federal funds. It's in the state's transportation improvement plan now. So it's coming. It's coming down the pipeline. It'll be here before the end of the decade. But it's the first one since the late 70s when Eisenhower's interstate system came through, and we haven't had one since then, and a lot of other places have. So it's time, and it took all hands on deck, staff, city leadership, to keep pushing it.
And as you mentioned, we North Dakota, Grand Forks got permission to go there. It's not like we get to pick where it goes. It has to go there.
Yeah, so in order to get a new interchange now, things have changed. I mean, I would have loved to, you know, Merrifield, you already have a crossing there. There's going to be a bridge. That was obviously a great option, but we wouldn't have gotten federal funding for it. You have to show without doubt that you're going to take traffic pressure off of another area. So they don't just build them for economic development or ease. They build them now because if you have interstate backups or you have 32nd that becomes so congested that it becomes an issue with the interstate system, that's what justifies that. So in the next 20 years, you're going to start to see issues with backing up on the interstate. The only one that showed enough justification to be able to build it was at 47th. You just didn't have enough benefit for being at Merrifield with access to the Allaire Center, the campus. You know, granted, there's a lot of housing and other ways you can access the city, but it didn't prove out that way. So this was the only one we were going to get funding for. And without that funding, I mean, the feds and the state pay for the entire interchange, $60+ million.
Right.
You know, looking at our general fund budget,
that's
more than our general fund budget every year. We can't afford that locally, so we need to have that support. We have enough work to do to, you know, get the interconnecting roads, storm sewer, water lines all in, so that's going to take some time.
So that's my follow up to that. So 47th out there on the Grand Fork side is a farmer's field. So I've seen it, but just hear from you, there are some plans to get some roads connected in there, what traffic signals look like, trying to get that other infrastructure. We're talking years down the road, but the city has some work to do on this too.
Yeah. And they've been very mindful, the engineering department and Bolton and Mink, I believe, is the firm that's helping out review some of that. And there's also a developer in that area that's master planning it. But the idea is to manage the traffic really well, to have a, you know, an attractive entrance into the city on 47th, manage traffic as it would be routed towards Discovery to the north or as it goes past south. So it's really going to be managed well from the start, so you don't end up with an interchange that has, you know, a left or right turn in a short distance from the interchange where cars back up.
Right.
It's being done right from the start and in a very thoughtful manner. So I think we're going to get the most out of it, Ken.
Another project that it was about a year ago where we heard from the feds that we're getting money to ease that railroad intersection of 42nd and Demers. Where are we at on that one?
Yeah, that's another exciting one. So the state, it's been kicked back to them now. They're going to do the final design. We'll be waiting to hear from them. Probably midsummer, by the end of the summer, we'll know exactly what it's going to look like. And then it's just a matter of beginning to bid that final design and then getting the thing built. So pretty exciting. Yeah, you had the Secretary of Transportation. Whether you like Pete Buttigieg or not, you got to respect that office. And that's, you know, Right. Pretty exciting to have a cabinet member spend time in Grand Forks. Got to meet, you know, I met with them for coffee, got to chat quite a bit about what some of our needs were. And, you know, it's putting Grand Forks on the map in a big way. Pretty exciting.
I do know from that visit, I spent time with the Secretary's staff for that weekend. They loved it here. They absolutely loved it here.
Well, they were impressed because we got an email, a message, I want to say 3 or 4 days before they were going to come, and we had everything organized for them, lined everything up, and made it really easy on their staff. So I think they were excited about that and then had a good showing, put a good event together. I mean, ultimately, they were bringing us $37 million, so came with a big check,
so to speak.
So we were, of course, ready to jump on that. But I think Grand Forks really shines, and when we have to pull things together quickly, we do a great job.
Speaking of pulling things together, you're trying to pull something together with the commercial air service at the Grand Forks Airport. We have hired a firm to take a look at. Well, frankly, what is the firm looking at? We've hired a firm.
Yeah, so they're gonna be the ones that ultimately submit a small community air service development grant, SCASD grant. It's called. These acronyms get out of hand sometimes. So they're really aligning the business community, getting all that information, that data from the business community. What are their travel needs? What are they doing now? You know, are they sending people to Minneapolis, to Fargo? Are they not traveling? Are they virtual? Anything that you can do to tell that story, you know, both from a quantitative but also qualitative, because they can look at the numbers and say, well, I don't know if we can justify this. Your air service in April was down. We were down 8% versus the state average up 8%. So imagine that we were pulling the average down and it was still up 8%.
Still up 8%.
So, right. We just haven't been promoting it good enough. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to sit back and just say this is good enough and let it fade into the night. We're going to work hard and we're going to grow with the way you've got All True going, the university, the base, the city, all these complexes, the Alaris Center. Everything is on all its firing on all its cylinders right now, and the airport is really the lagging entity, and they need to catch up.
And that's a tough one a little bit. It's kind of a horse and buggy discussion, right? Do all these other things have, you mentioned All True, UND, Grand Sky, Air Force Base, does that need to come first to generate the traffic? Or I've had this discussion with other people of what has to happen first, and I think it's both.
They happen at the same time. Obviously, the more economic development, the better. But when we had 140,000, 150,000 employments every year and we're down below 80,000, 90,000, we've proven that we can have essentially double in the past. How we can't keep up with where we were in the past and have cut by 50%, it's not good enough. And we can't sit by and let that happen. So we need to be more aggressive. Fargo, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they were maybe 1.5-2 times us on employments and their air service.
Yep.
They're 5-6 times ahead of us now. So they've grown by leaps and bounds. And we're just sitting there letting it happen. And we're not going to do that anymore.
And is it true that the business community and the airport in Fargo did something similar to what you're doing now, but they did theirs about 20 years ago?
Yeah, they kicked that off. So we actually had a meeting with their former economic development director. And I mean, a little bit of the difference was the connection that the airport and the director had with the business community. They were very much in direct contact often, you know, with some of the big industry like your Bobcats, your Microsofts. They were talking through this, and they saw it ahead of time. They were more visionary with their airport than we have been. Whether we like it or not, or we've been too conservative, that is the model to follow. And they're eating our lunch right now when it comes to air service. And too many people from Grand Forks. We what is it, 53% of our catchment area is leaving. So that means more than half of the people that should be flying out of here are going somewhere else. And 37%, so it's of the 53 leaving, 37 of that. So 37 out of every 50, that means two-thirds of the people that are leaving Grand Forks to fly somewhere else are going to Fargo.
Right.
And then the other third is essentially Minneapolis, which is more your international flights to begin with. So we have the data that tells the story that we should have more air service. We just got to have the gumption and the willingness to push it to get it done.
Sure. You have the data of what the problem is and really drilled into it. Now it's a matter of fixing the problem.
We can sit and admire the problem, or we can do something about it.
And I like that.
I've had enough admiring. It's not an academic exercise. Let's get something done.
No, we can admire the problem. We're talking about lots of really good things going on in Grand Forks. It's really exciting. There are bumps in the road. So Epic, in the middle of constructing buildings in the downtown area now who knows what their future is? Have you heard from the company yet? I know they have lots of projects around the area. Have you heard anything?
Well, they're sorting it out. I think the one thing we can look at here is it's not just like the Grand Forks project wasn't the issue. They have projects in 18 different cities. They have projects
going everywhere.
They got spread too thin. I mean, this is speculation, but they clearly got spread too thin, had too much cash going out and not ways to get all the projects done. And we're probably expecting more investment to come in and needed more investment to come in, and it slowed. Rates went up. So, I mean, a lot of the perfect storm kind of happened. I don't know, you know, what their business model was and how, you know, if there was flaws in it. I haven't, you know, that's their internal stuff. I know they had people working for them that didn't know the situation. So it was, you know, well hidden within the company. But they've got two of the buildings done. That's the good news. So those buildings will be here. They're getting filled up with apartments. Yeah, and the
people are living in them.
I think you got stakeholders, obviously, that are apartment owners, condo owners that were maybe interested in the commercial, investors. So there's a lot of stakeholders that really want to see it be successful and see that square get done. For the community, I just think it's a tremendous, you know, looking at the lights and what that draw has been in West Fargo, I still think the hope is another developer comes in, the investors sort of re-up and make sure they get enough money to get the project finished. And at least the Grand Forks one, we don't care what happens in the rest of their portfolio. We care about what happens in Grand Forks. So if there's local investors involved and they're able to make it, you know, get it across the finish line, that's what we're hoping for. But we're gonna follow our side of the contract. If it's defaulted on their side, then that's their side. We're not out a single penny. We haven't given Epic any money. They've actually paid in, you know, almost $140,000 in permitting fees. So we've got increased taxes from them already from the project. So it's kind of a win no matter what. I'd love to see the ultimate win of having that square.
Sure.
Square done, paid for, bringing in revenue from sales tax, bringing in revenue from increased property taxes, and having more business and more activity in our community.
I do know there was that update from Mr. Gostad at last night's council meeting. So the city had beautification funds, $1.1 million that would go to them for the public square, but that has not been paid out.
Right. Correct? Yeah, they had a bunch of conditions they would have had to have gotten done first. Our money was kind of last in, so it was more of a reimbursement type of a model. So. Yeah, none of that money is that money. Obviously, won't go out until that contract's fulfilled, which means that the square has shown the financial ability of being finished. So until that happens, the city attorney did a great job setting that up. Essentially, you got risk-free growth in the community. Regardless, you had a lot of construction work, a lot of activity, and the townhouse hotel was there before. It was worth $2 million. Now, even with these two structures, it's worth $30 million. So something that was paying about $32,000 is paying $475,000 now in property taxes. So it's a win regardless for the community. We just would prefer that sort of ultimate win, so
sure.
to speak.
Just want to get it finished. Yeah. And that is something. Give a quick shout out here to Dan Gostad, city attorney. Those development agreements that he's put together on various projects that have come in, I can't imagine. I'm glad a lawyer writes them. I've read through them. But good on him. Situations like this protect the city.
Well, he'll be the first to tell you, you know, when he's drafting that first contract, it is not in the best interest of the person he's, you know, the other party.
Sure.
They're very much in our best interest. Might we give a little here or there to make it, you know, to make it a fair contract, but they're not fair contracts when he starts. They're very much in our favor. And I think that's what you need out of a city attorney. And there's nobody that works harder. I mean, if I'm working 60 hours, you know, Todd Phelan's working 70, Gostad's working 104. I mean, that's just the weekly workload. It could be a Sunday night and you drive by, you're getting an ice cream cone at Dairy Queen and taking the bikes in the green with your kids. Gostad's still in his office there, working with burning the midnight oil. It's just that's the kind of work that he does, and you got to respect that.
Yeah, no, it's really good. So, speaking of work, you're in it right now from the standpoint of the 2025 city budget. starts at the department level, goes through the mayor's office as far as the recommendation to council. Council makes the final decision. So right now, I know you're having several meetings with various departments and whatnot. What are some things for 2025 are you looking for in the budget?
Well, the biggest thing is we had the budget performed really well in the last couple of years. So we've built surpluses. We originally had so when I'm talking about your reserves, I'm talking about as a percentage of the general fund. So right. If your general fund goes up, your reserves have to go up that same amount to keep your reserve at that level. When I first got into office, we were running that 20 to 21%. We're up to about 29% now. So if you got a $50 million budget, call it roughly $15 million,
right.
In reserves. So we've built the reserves, which is good for the future of the city. Last year, we had a massive increase with the new salary plan. So you had, I want to say it was almost, it was like 9%, and then you had a 15% increase in health insurance. So we've had massive increases last year. So really, it's all about trying to find how to fund those salary increases for this year and keep the program going. We've got some operations and maintenance. So there's no bells and whistles. There's nothing fancy in this budget. We had about a $4 million gap. We've already cut down, I want to say, about $2 million of that. We're cutting down another probably $1.5 million that's sort of in between area right now. So we're going to have to continue to cut to make a balanced budget. But we got a great finance team. We're finding the places that we can cut and efficiencies that we can make. And we don't want to have, push things back where we're going to have a big hit later. So you got to spend the dollars on different capital needs. You can't just let those buckets empty out or end up in a real mess in the future. But as far as a balanced budget, we've certainly ran a well-balanced budget in the last 4 years and increased our reserves and I think funded some amazing things. So we're moving the community forward despite being a smaller and smaller piece of the tax pie. We were over 30 when I first got 30%. So every dollar of taxes, we're at 27% now. So we keep becoming smaller, but we're still trying to grow the community. So I think it's great.
And I think it's fair from the budget process. I've heard this from residents in the past. You're like, well, it gets to council and council never cuts. Well, what really happens is the department comes in with its request, right? Yeah. And they don't necessarily know what other departments are doing. And then really at this level, at the finance level, at your level before it gets to council, like you said, there is a, here's what I want it to be. That everything's coming in more. We need to solve that problem before it even gets to council.
Yeah, there's so much. You got a budget that's I think 400 pages, but we had increases from some departments on maintenance and operations that were 30%. When you're increasing, your revenue is only increasing by 5 or 6%. You can't have a 30% increase in your expenses. Or you're never going to catch up. So it's been a challenge. You can't cut everywhere. There's things that we are very unwilling to cut. Because when it comes to public safety, other areas, you have to make it work. But is there spots where they can trim? Certainly, but we need to make sure the core services are there.
Yeah, no, really good. And it's just a busy time of year. I will say this, new council comes on, gets sworn in, and they are right into it.
And that's a very big challenge. I mean, I had a lot of expertise when I came in and dove into it as a candidate. If you aren't as a council member and you're just trying to see it for the first time, I mean, you're going to be blown away because there's just so much to take on. You really have to be up to speed on the budget ahead of time so you know what you're voting on when you get in, because you're going to get in June and we got to approve something within 6 weeks. So
Yeah. So non-city related, it's the time of year. And so we're going to talk hockey here a little bit. And I want to pick your brain as a former professional athlete. It's the time of year where hockey series in the NHL are ending. You get the handshake at the end of the line and you always, there's a camera shot and they focus in on a player. Is this it for this player? Yeah. Zach Parise, the Colorado lost, and he had multiple cameras on him. Other players on the other team knows. Give him a handshake. As a professional athlete, who frankly you got to call your shot when you're done. Not all players get to do that.
Yeah.
Is at what point does it hit you that, oh, this is it?
Well, I don't know if I'm the best person to ask because I retired and then came out of retirement, played for another year, and then retired again. Well, so.
But it's tough. You still had that urge to play. Right?
Yeah, for me, it was important to leave when I was still at a high level. I didn't want to have to remember my last couple of years as I was just grabbing at straws trying to stay there. I wanted to be still performing and still be a top player. So when I look back, I remember even my last year, you can still got it type of thing. So it's tough, but eventually, your body gives out a little bit. You got different things, by the time you started playing, you didn't have any, probably a wife, kids, anything. By now you got wives, kids, nieces, nephews, cousins, businesses. You've got a lot. You've built a life, and not that your life pauses. Hockey was your life, but that's going to be a short period of time. The rest of your life's, you're going to play hockey 10, 12, 15 years, you're going to live 80 years. So it's the other 70 years that you got to figure out what you're going to do and do it well and find a passion. So Zach, what a phenomenal guy, great career. You know, he's certainly a friend. I haven't got this to chat with him since he's officially retired,
right.
But, always did things the right way. Well done career. He deserves a good, you know, quiet, healthy, happy retirement. I think he'll have that.
So Zach's going through this right now. I'm going to ask you, was there a point as you retired and was it like the start of the next season where it kind of sunk in? Like, is there a transition time in there?
I'll say, so here's how it works. You retire and then you get, summer's always great because you always got to enjoy the summers.
Sure.
You're at the lake. And then training camp starts and you're like, man, training camp was always tough because you got 2-3 practices a day. You don't regret it during training camp. Then the season starts and you're kind of, you know, you're starting to feel it. It's like Christmas, January, February. Suddenly you're like, man, you know, I wish I had still hanging around the guys, had, you know, some place to go. I was playing in the game. So that's when you really start to miss it. I would say it's about 3-4 months into that next season that you're like, man, did I make the right choice? And for me, I guess not, because my team over there kept, you know, sending me messages saying, we got to have you come back. And
oh, really?
Have a great year. And I was feeling like I was still called to go back. So I ended up going back for another year. But after that season and spending most of that season away from my family, it wasn't in that place anymore. It wasn't worth it.
No, that's got to be hard. I mean, don't get me wrong. My kids can drive me nuts sometimes, but yeah. You're gone for a weekend and you're like, well, kind of miss them. Yeah. Can't imagine months at a time and stuff like that. So, because just some numbers. Yes, you ended at a high level. 412 games played, 405 points. You
just needed 7 more to be a point a game.
Yeah, almost. You're 0.98 a point a game. You're still the leading scorer for the franchise out there. You have a Roman
Starchenko. He's catching me. Yeah, he's probably played twice the games, but yeah,
he's played 720 games of professional
hockey.
He's
catching me in points. You must have dug deep there. Yeah.
Well, Wikipedia is a wonderful thing, right? That 720 games.
He's built it up. Yeah, and that's, think of the travel. You're 13 time zones. I did. So when I left the league, I was the highest scoring foreign born player in league history. So you know, I had accumulated some
sure,
points.
Sure.
Obviously, you know, I've been out for, what is it, 5-6 years now? So
right.
People have caught me, but yeah, it's great. I'm sure no one, you know, they're probably not going to catch me on a points per game basis, but I'm sure Starry, that's his nickname. Well, you know, he's put the time in. He'll probably catch me here next
season.
But
the thing that got me was just sheer number of games. That's good for him. Your body's not meant to hang in that long all the time. I get tired playing 9 holes of golf.
Maybe you shouldn't tell people that.
I shouldn't tell people that. All right. Mayor, thank you very much. Appreciate you doing this. We talked about it. We're going to continue on with this podcast. Maybe take a little break here. We're going to get past the election.
Yeah.
And then we'll do that, unless I can convince Brett Weber to come on one last
time.
He's done. So then he can just spill the beans of whatever he wants. But thank you, Mayor. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, John.
Mayor Brandon Bochensky, our guest on the City Chatter podcast. And if you want to catch this episode, the replay of this one, or see any of the previous episodes, go to grandforksgov.com/podcast. You can see all the old ones. And again, we'll be back after the election with a new council, and we'll get rolling from there. Everyone, have a good afternoon.